Welcome to another edition of Staff Meeting, the occasional podcast of St. John's Episcopal Church in Old Town, Saginaw, Michigan, on Michigan Avenue, between Court and Hancock, across from Pasong's and Frawley's.
Most importantly, Pasong's and Frawley's.
Yeah. Liquid Lounge, The Bread Guy, Daniel's Grill, and somewhat close to the Red Eye Cafe.
Oracle Brewing.
The distillery.
Yeah, but not too close to Jimmy John's.
We will pass on that. I am Father Kurt Norman, rector of St. John's. Reverend Dr. Pam Renna joins as priest for pastoral care, guide for Invite, Welcome, Connect, that ministry, and knower of all things France. Amy Simons is our director of Christian formation and in-house tea sommelier. I guess that's the closest word for nearest to tea barista, but that's coffee. But you have lots of tea in your office with different flavors next to your teapot.
Loose leaf over bagged every time.
Dr. Kevin Simons, organist, choir master, liturgist, connoisseur of British baking shows, fan of Angela Lansbury. Did I leave anything out?
Maker of the greatest star of all, right?
Maker of great split pea soup, which I have not had much of.
That's true. I know. Bring me your ham bones. You're poor. You're tired.
Do we know if that's on the menu at Frawley's today? Have you checked the menu at
Frawley's?
I don't know. Amy and I recorded a previous episode of the podcast in which we discussed the theology of Palm Sunday. What we're going to talk about in this episode is Holy Week, specifically the liturgies of Holy Week we have in the Book of Common Prayer, 1979, and how we pray those here at St. John's. We will begin on page 270 of the prayer book for those of you following along at home. The Sunday of the Passion, Palm Sunday, which is April 14th this year. Let's go straight to the rubrics. Here they are. When the circumstances permit, as I X out a phone call, of course I get a phone call on Vonage, the great phone system here at the church, and I have just declined that. So we can talk about the rubrics. Far more important, when circumstances permit, the congregation may gather at a place apart from the church so that all may go into the church in procession. So let's talk about this a little bit, how we do it here. Michigan weather, what's it going to be like on April 14th? And what are the options we have as we do this procession of the palms?
Well, April 14th last year, I think, was the ice storm.
It was.
So
we process from one inside room to
right.
another
so
inside
we,
room.
Right, so we keep it inside.
we weren't here. We canceled church that day.
That was Easter 2, It was the Sunday after Easter.
Right, okay, I'm sorry, that's right. April 15th was...
We were here for Palm Sunday last year.
Right,
but
okay,
the ice storm...
Can't cancel Palm Sunday.
No. But, so we've just found it's a little bit safer to... plan to keep it inside, and it's easier for folks that have mobility issues too.
Obviously, the 8 o'clock will do it just within the nave sanctuary itself. That's just the nature of that service. But the 10:30, how has it been done? This is only my third Palm Sunday here. How do we go about that?
We gather in the community room, and everybody gets their palms. We have the blessing of the palms. There are some readings, and the Liturgy of the Palms is done out in the community room. And then I fire up the organ, and we come into church together, singing All Glory, Long Honor.
And Pam, you were holding up your hand.
No, I was holding my hand because for the blessing of the palms,
exactly.
We hold up our hand with the palm in it.
Right, it's a podcast. There's no camera.
I can't quite get with this.
Yeah, right.
but you raise an important point. And what's happening with that, with the raising of the palm, each of the persons who has a palm frond, what are we doing?
Mm-hmm.
We're cheering him in.
Yeah. Celebrating. It's a big thing for the kids. I've got one of my favorite pictures that keeps coming up on my social media, Time Hops, are a picture of our daughter with as many palm branches as she can physically hold. You know, and
she's a tree.
She's a tree, and she's this big cheesy grin on her face that she just is so excited for that moment.
It's really nice to be there for that, and you can see everyone holding up their palms. So you have kind of a view of a sea of palms. You're all going in together. You're all celebrating this together with your palms. It's quite a visual moment.
And after the service, a lot of people keep those. And so I've seen some people mm-hmm. fold them into nice crosses. I don't have that skill. So, I've kept them before behind a cross that I have on the wall to keep it for the year because we keep that until, theoretically, although we haven't really done it, those palm fronds can be burned down mm-hmm. into ashes for Ash Wednesday. That's part of the tradition that...
we have a large store of ashes.
We have, yeah.
We burn enough ashes for...
I think we're good for a couple of years. Right.
So we come in reduced number of readings. We do have the Passion narrative of Passion Gospel about Jesus' passion, of course, referring to his suffering. But within the midst of that, we don't separate that gospel reading into parts. There are other congregations where somebody takes on the role of different people within the story, you know, narrator, Jesus, Judas, soldiers. But we don't do that. We just have a straight through reading of it. But within that story, it's very important to point out, and this is more noticeable when we have those parts separated, is that we get to a point where we say, crucify him, Jesus. So we've gone from, in the service at the beginning, cheering him on to calling for his death. And that's an important theological point for us to consider, that there are times when we want God and Christ close to us, and other times like, stay away. And so that's part of the, Amy and I talked about the whiplash of Palm Sunday, and it's there. Anything special within the anthems or the hymns, of course?
We do a hymn that Sunday. The hymns are pretty clear within the hymnal for Palm Sunday, but we use a hymn called "Ride On, Ride On in Majesty," which is really pretty dark to sort of get us in the mindset from All Glory, Law, and Honor, which is pretty up to move us to that place. Then we always end with "O Sacred Head, Now Wounded," which is. We also sing that on Good Friday. But
So the music really mirrors the text. We start festive and then we end very solemn.
It's really wonderful to see and hear how all the music and to participate in that with singing, how it really, what you just said, Amy, how it really mirrors what we're doing, mirrors the story.
Is it now wounded or sore wounded? Or am I thinking of a different text?
It is sore. It is sore, okay. But there are some translations that use now, which is why did that. But it is sore. That's right.
I can be old school. Well, you know, hey, anytime, you know.
Well done.
From a guy who notices his sermon typos while preaching, you know, it's all good. And we omit a couple things because of the length and the different things that we need to do. Nicene Creed is omitted in accordance with prayer book rubric, as well as the confession of sin. But then we still have prayers of the people and then Eucharistic prayer A, which is more penitential. But this is a time we'll make that switch back to A. Still have the prayer of humble access in there. So good, solid, meaty liturgy. All right, here we go. Maundy Thursday. We talk about this a lot without the microphones around, but Maundy, from the Latin for mandate or commandment, not Monday, as I used to think, and I wasn't the only one, but a lot of people think that it's Monday, Thursday, how does that work? It's not. Maundy Jesus' commandment to his followers in John chapter 13, verse 34. Again, stated in 15:12, I give you a new commandment, that you love one another just as I have loved you. You should love one another. By this, everyone will know that you are my disciples if you have love for one another. Pretty clear. So,
I always thought the mandate actually for Maundy Thursday is not about that, but about the Eucharist.
There's institution that too.
Of the Eucharist.
So there's the both end.
Right.
But
I always associated the mandate with do this in remembrance of me.
Mm-hmm. So we've got that. We've got the love commandment. We've got the Eucharist, which... So there's a thing with that. We start the liturgy with the penitential order and immediately go to the exhortation, mm-hmm. Page 316 of the prayer book, which is a very, very sobering language about why it is that we do what we do. Now, in the Episcopal Church, we have the Eucharist. We have Holy Communion every week. And I know that some Lutheran friends of ours up the street, we have people here who are friends there. If you drive past their church, I think it's a Wisconsin Synod, it's packed on Maundy Thursday.
Mm-hmm.
They don't have Eucharist all the time, every Sunday. Now, we do, and I'm kind of curious, what's your thoughts on this, if... because we have it so often, do we tend to overlook it? Is that a judgmental question coming from me? What are your thoughts on that?
Do we tend to overlook what, the communion?
Yeah. Yeah. Just the
they're taken for granted, you mean?
Well, okay, yeah, and that may be better stated. Is it potentially that we might take it for granted?
Well, I don't think it's any secret. I'm of a Catholic persuasion, and... so I feel very strongly that the church at the primary service on Sunday needs to have the Eucharist. Mm-hmm. I realize, and that was a change from the way, you know, it was in the previous prayer book. Mm-hmm. That being said, yeah, I do think sometimes we can, because of that, we can take it for granted. And so Maundy Thursday tends to be just sort of like another day. Is that what you're...
Well, yeah, and that's today? Well, that's the purpose of the exhortation,
right,
is to get that language in there. And also we use Eucharistic Prayer D, which is who knows how many iterations down from a second century...
Right.
I think it was Basil.
St. Basil the Great, that great liturgist.
So, which is a longer Eucharistic prayer than we usually use, but a very powerful one. And Christians and different cultures and different ages and different languages have prayed that down the millennia, I guess I could say.
Mm-hmm.
So there's that. So we've got the Eucharist, we've got the love aspect, and going along with that, foot washing.
Mm-hmm.
Well, this goes back to how Christ, you know, loved each other, how I loved you, and he became a servant. So this is the great symbol of his servantness. He led by taking care of us, not by being in front all the time.
And that's what precedes in John chapter 13, the love commandment is the recounting of Jesus washing his followers' feet and the little interaction with Peter. He's like, no, wash my whole body. And Jesus is like, no, just the feet.
It's very humbling because I don't know about you guys, but my feet are fairly disgusting. I know that this is coming when I attend a Maundy Thursday service, and so I tend to pick socks that don't make my toes all linty, you know, and give my nails a trim. And I'm still awkward and uncomfortable and very insecure when someone washes my feet. And I think that's kind of the point, is that you kind of realize what that experience is like, that being humbled is part of this experience. And and if you think about the first round, you know, they were wearing sandals and it was dirty and dusty and calloused, and they didn't have the same heads up that I have.
It is really humbling. I remember when the first time, I do not come from an Episcopal tradition, and I had never been to a Maundy Thursday service, and I'd never had my feet washed, but I was over at Calvary, And the priest there said that this is what we were doing and that no one wanted to do it, so he told me that I had to do it. And I'm up. And so I went down there. I turned 50 shades of red, mm-hmm. and I was very embarrassed by the whole thing. But now when I do it here, it's an honor. Kurt washes my feet and washes. And there's something very significant about that, very spiritual about that, very humbling. Mm-hmm. And I think that most people who come up for that feel that. It's no longer an embarrassment. It is, I'm giving myself over to Christ in this way. It's a wonderful symbol.
And to each other, we're very vulnerable. You're kind of exposing, mm-hmm. you know, the not pretty and polished parts mm-hmm. of yourself.
Which is very countercultural. mm-hmm. And which is why it's very difficult for people to come up. And the way that we do it here is, clergy will, Pam and I wash each other's feet, and then the first people who come up, and then instead of clergy washing everybody's feet, if once you have your feet washed, you wash the feet of the person
That's
who is back.
Right. So if you wash mine, wash Kevin's,
because,
Kevin wash someone else. Yeah.
Because we talk about this all the time, Pam and I and staff, we are not the professional Christians. We are people who empower, clergy empower the laity. And so it's not just the professional Christians doing their thing. It's about all of the baptized engaging in the ministry of Jesus, and so we pass that along. It's symbolic of that.
Go out and do likewise.
Yeah,
right,
very much.
Right, right.
Yeah, I will say though that if you aren't ready to make yourself that vulnerable, mm-hmm. that it's still okay, because being in that worship service, being in that space, and watching it happen can also be moving.
Yeah, you don't. There's no peer pressure to come up and get your feet
yeah.
washed.
Not,
you know,
because I didn't. I mean, the first time right. I did it was very moving, and I have done it since. But I have sat in the pew, you know, before and watched it happen, and was and still that
I
was a lot
is,
to think about.
That's right. You watch other people do it
exactly. So you got to decide for yourself.
And as we like to say,
yeah.
all can.
Some should.
None must.
There you go. Mm-hmm. That's the some sort of Episcopal maxim or something
yeah.
like that.
But I think we've done it a couple of different ways here in that sometimes the priests have washed
mm-hmm.
everyone's feet.
Mm-hmm.
And that was fine. But the way we do it, I think, Kurt, since you came, is that you know you do it to each other. And
yeah.
to me, that's much more interesting, much more symbolic and
mm-hmm.
and moving. And you know, you think more about the people that you're serving with.
So foot washing, the Eucharist, and after the Eucharist, we set up an altar of repose with the reserved sacrament, which and just the bread, just the body of Christ, which we'll come back on Good Friday. We'll get to that in a moment, and then the stripping of the altar, which means removing all the ornaments, all the hangings. And then closing with, I like to pour the wine, the blood of Christ, into the altar as the final action of that. And you've not seen that here before.
Nope,
right?
That was news to me. and I in all the parishes I've worked for, I have never seen that before.
It's super dramatic.
It's very dramatic. I'm all about it now. But
it's very noisy.
Yeah, I think it's... the first time, I think, people in the choir said, was he angry? And I said, no, he's just trying to be dramatic. No.
But it's very jarring.
No, yeah,
it
is. Because everything's quiet.
Yeah.
And
yeah,
yeah.
In the body of Father Christ, and then it appears that it's being treated very disrespectfully. And so, you know, like, your instinct is to, like, leap out there and be like, what is going on?
But that's the
yeah.
thing. He was crucified.
Yeah,
but,
he's
know,
being
treated
very, yeah.
Know, you know, sword in the side and checking to see if he's still alive. But I do get very caught up in that. And so am I a little bit angry? Yeah, probably.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, thinking about what this really is, it's very moving for me to do that. So I do think my tone changes for Holy Week. And so if I'm, you know, a little more short fused, that's why. And maybe I put that on a little bit, but I think to a large degree, it is genuine to a large degree. But you know, like anybody else, I'm tempted to milk it, but and maybe ham it up a little bit. But it's It's a very powerful statement about what happened on the cross. You know the altar, the sacrifice of Christ. So there's that.
Because the crucifixion was a very messy thing, and so I think that's what you're drawing attention to it with the noise on the altar, and then the wine or the blood of Christ being spilled. I think it's very symbolic of what actually happened.
Yeah, and that's why I encourage folks to take part in the Holy Week liturgies. I don't say this judgmentally, and I mentioned this at the announcements this past week that some people want to skip the messy stuff and just get to the resurrection, the good stuff on Easter, but life doesn't work that way. And the liturgies mirror that. I mean, the rituals are the realities. Life is not a straight line. But we've got to go through the suffering. We can't do an end around. And so I think that's a little more honest way to approach that. And yes, people have busy schedules. I get that. But that's just kind of the way that I approach that and encourage and invite people to come. Without trying to lay another burden on everybody's already busy schedules. So, Good Friday liturgy is pretty basic. It's a continuation, at least I was always taught as a continuation of the Maundy Thursday liturgy.
Right.
So there's
dismissal on Maundy Thursday because the church stays in prayer.
And that itself is quite meaningful.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of quiet. Before that, before the service actually starts, there'll be a noon. I should say Maundy Thursday's 7 p.m. on the 18th, and then noon on the 19th for Good Friday. Passion Gospel is read again, this time from John's Gospel, and we've got to be very careful. I want to emphasize again how not to be anti-Semitic. These texts have been abused over many years, but that's not what we're about here. Longer discussion in other places. So give a little bit of a reflection, the meditation sermon. The good news for everybody is that once we get in, I mean, even this past week, because there are so many sermons that I have to write, they're all shorter. You'll be happy about that.
Quality over quantity. We're
good. Of course, the other Episcopal Church maxim is that there is no salvation after 12 minutes on the sermon. So
I had heard that was 10 minutes.
Yeah,
both symbolic numbers.
Yeah,
I understand. My
understanding was 10.
It's actually a lot more difficult to write shorter sermons.
Oh, no question.
Was
it FDR said that about speeches, that it took him, 20 minutes to write a 2-hour speech, but it took him.
Yeah.
Two hours to write something like that.
So we have that. Good Friday, I love the solemn collects. These extended prayers and responses. I mean, it gets into everything. It gets into every aspect of life. It's almost like the Litany of Penitence on Ash Wednesday. It has that kind of depth and really digs deeply into our souls. Another little trivia that Good Friday is one of the two, according to the prayer book, the two fasting days within the Episcopal Church, the other being Ash Wednesday. So there's that. So the Psalm Collects, devotions at the cross. So we bring in a cross for people to come up and say a prayer. Kevin, if I'm remembering correctly, we have music going on at that
time. There's a hymn actually appointed for it in the prayer book. And that's what we sing, which the title is Now Escaping Me. Mm-hmm. But it's
good, solemn though.
It is very solemn, yes. Mm-hmm. Yes. So I think it's called an adoration hymn, actually.
That's quite a moment when people have the opportunity to go up and stand at the foot of the cross, touch the cross if they should want to, or just hold their hands to themselves and just have a silent time with Jesus, and it's a very powerful moment.
I'm often struck at how uninhibited our young people are, you know, that sometimes we get caught up in our adultness, you know, of what people are going to think of us or what we should or shouldn't do and that kind of thing. And I remember last year we had two of our small first graders come up and knelt at the cross, and it seemed, I mean, they were duly respectful, but it seemed less of a challenge for them to find that part of themselves, mm-hmm. and go in and kneel and be a little repentant.
And that helps us adults as well.
It does, doesn't it? Yeah, it does.
So we have that. Then we'll record another podcast about the vigil and be cognizant of time here. So here's how I want to close this podcast. Driving to work this morning, and this is sort of why I opened the way that we did. Driving to work this morning on Gratiot, I noticed a new sign where Gratiot breaks off onto Stevens, and it's a sign that welcomes people to Riverside Saginaw. Great looking sign. St. John's is in the middle of an area that is making a very strong comeback, and I love being here, being the church here. And so I want to ask each of you, and there's more than one correct answer, but what is your favorite restaurant in Old Town?
Oh.
And we'll have to name many. Because there are a lot of times we go as a group, and sometimes it's just two of us or one of us or whatever. But I'll start off with a few. I know you're going to name a few others, but and maybe this counts as Old Town, but Scottish Inn.
Mm-hmm.
Mm. Love Scottish Inn.
Love the Scottish Inn.
Huron Fish Company.
Mm-hmm.
And I love them for many reasons, but they're the only place in Saginaw, or at least in Michigan, that I've found that has corn nuggets. It's fried cream corn. It's very good.
Mm-hmm. They also will beautifully prepare the fillets we have for our fish dinner. They do such a great job.
Yeah, they do. Park Asia is always good if you're
cheap Chinese.
It's great stuff. But your turn.
I'm going to vote for the bread guy, and I have several reasons for that. I really like him.
Well, that's good.
He's kind of cute, and he also speaks French. He spent a year studying in France and to kind of learn about the importance of bread in French life. So whenever I go in to order bread from him, I talk French to him. And I also like him because he started out, I think, in Saginaw Valley, majoring in mechanical engineering, and he decided that was not his passion, that he went with his passion. And that is really cool to me, that he's ending up making bread in Old Town Saginaw, speaking French to the assistant priest at St. John's. I think that's really cool. Mm.
Yeah, and we made you buy us pinwheels not too long ago. Those are very, very good.
Yeah,
those
I'm pinwheels. Never sorry when Pam makes a trip to the bread guy.
Yeah, I got Amy a croissant the other day. Got one croissant and we split.
We did, we shared it. It was lovely. It sounds almost trite, but I love walking into Fralia's or Poisson's because every time I do, they know my name. They know that we're from here. They recognize our phone number when I call in the order. And I love that sense of neighborhood, that, you know, that people are just aware of the people around them.
My favorite is China City.
Oh, yeah.
China City is just the best Singapore noodles you've ever had. They're just the best. So, yeah.
I'm not sure.
China
it's
City
good
fan.
Season if you order it later in the day.
Michigan Ave.
It's past Daniel's Grill. You know,
right.
Which is new, and I love...
Oh, great Lebanese food.
Great.
Oh, my.
Yeah.
Yummy. Yeah. Really yummy Lebanese food.
Yeah. But if I had to pick one, that'd be the one.
Yeah.
Hit some China.
Mm-hmm.
So, I'm getting hungry.
Mm-hmm.
At least at the recording of this podcast, it's time for lunch.
Yeah.
All right. So, therefore... Go in peace to love and serve the Lord.
Thanks
be to God.